Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick, it's a pleasure to have you. I don't believe we've ever spoken before. You're a recent graduate of Slippery Rock. Am I right about that?
No.
That's the greatest intro we have by far. Nick Farabaugh of Penn Live joins us now. He is on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. He's also on video. You should watch us on our YouTube channel. The numbers are just exploding on there. People want to watch the show. Mostly, I know, because of Bob. There's Bob's cardboard. That thing looks so real, doesn't it?
It does.
The cardboard cutout of Bob.
You know, Bob has gotten taller as we've gone on in the last couple of days. But yes, it does look very realistic.
You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game all season long, kicking off with the juicy Week 6 matchup between the Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Nick, it's good to have you, my friend. We haven't really talked much about this game yet. Of course, it's only Tuesday. What are the Steelers getting in the Cleveland Browns?
I think they're getting a really, really good defense here. I think the Browns are one of the best defensive units probably in football, to be quite honest with you. Great front, good secondary. The linebacker play has been better for them. They finally have guys that can actually use the attention Myles Garrett gets and win. And I think that's the difference for them this year. The offense, though, on the other side, has been a complete disaster. I mean, it really has. That's why they benched Flacco. Dylan Gabriel looked fine last week against the Vikings, but they have struggled to run the ball consistently. The offensive line has gotten Flacco and Gabriel killed. So it's kind of a tale of two teams. You have a really good defense that is trying to kind of slug this team all along, and then you have an offense that can't get out of its own way.
I got so much to talk about today, so I'll just skip around. We'll start with the running game, which hasn't been great this year. Jaylen Warren, at least you look at yards per carry, he had some good moments, a great play against Seattle, but he's only averaging about 3 yards a carry. Then Kenneth Gainwell comes in and goes for 99 yards, I think, on 19 carries. Does that merit more time for him? Is it even crazy to think that, hey, we weren't running the ball. He did against a pretty good defense. Maybe he should be the guy who gets the most carries, even if Warren's ready to go.
I wouldn't consider that. I think Jaylen Warren is, to be quite honest with you, maybe the team's best offensive player. I truly believe that. And that's my hot take about this. He's so good in space. He creates so much room. I mean, against the Patriots, he had 47 yards and he forced 10 missed tackles. I mean, there was no room for him to run. What the Steelers did this past week against the Vikings, I think they found the formula. And what the formula is it's playing Darnell Washington. That's the formula, and that's what I think is the bigger topic is how do they utilize this tight end room? Because you can't take 80 off the football field. He does so much different things for this team in the run game, and he's not a total non-zero in the passing game. And so that's, to me, the bigger discussion. Now, should Kenny Gainwell get, you know, 30 to 40% of the snaps? Totally okay with that. I think he's a good, nice player. I think we saw that. Kenny Gainwell is a good player. But Jaylen Warren, to me, is so dynamic. Still should be the lead dog in this backfield. But the real takeaway in me from the run game, play number 80 a lot more. He played 90% of the snaps last week.
Okay, but that leads us to another question. What about number 88? And if the Steelers aren't going to use Pat Freiermuth, and they've used him precious little this season, would it make sense to look at dealing him and trying to maybe parlay him into a number two wide receiver or parlay him into something else.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's not getting utilized for what I think is three reasons. One, I think that they naturally like Jonnu in the quick game yak kind of role, and so Jonnu's getting the manufactured touches. Two, Darnell's just the better blocker, and so he's getting more. And three, I don't think he has great chemistry with Aaron Rodgers. Because Muth is a chain mover intermediate type of player, and if you don't have good chemistry with your quarterback, that's naturally not going to pop. And so we've seen him and Rodgers have kind of moments where they don't feel like they're on the same page all year. And so that's kind of where that comes from. I think he probably ends up coming along a little bit as the season goes along. He's too good to me. He's not an elite tight end, but he is a good tight end that does a lot of good things well. And here's the thing. They're getting $24 million out of it. I don't want to just talk about Pat here. I want to talk about Jonnu too, because Jonnu Smith is being used as a glorified running back right now. His average depth of target, Joe, is under a yard. He's being utilized as a screen, pop pass, real quick game merchant. That's all he's being utilized as. Combined, those two are making $24 million and have less than 200 yards combined. Mm. That is not good investment. And so does it make sense to move one of them? Certainly, I think it does. Is it going to be at the trade deadline? I don't think so, because I don't see a wide receiver two worthy player out there right now that I think is going to be moved. Now, maybe we get closer and you see a Chris Olave, a Jacoby Myers, maybe that then makes some sense. But right now, there's no player worth that. But this offseason, if this doesn't change, there's going to be a lot of tough discussions. And I think moving forward, as I said previously, Joe, I think 80's the future of this room. And so I think Darnell should be the one extended, but someone's going to have to be shed then, whether it's Jonnu or Pat.
Well, let's move to the outside then. What does the absence of Calvin Austin mean for Roman Wilson or maybe somebody else out there?
Well, it should mean more opportunities for Roman Wilson. He's kind of been in a similar boat to Muth, which is doesn't have great chemistry with Rodgers, but also what does he provide that the team didn't have with Calvin healthy? He's not a particularly well-rounded player right now, Joe, and what he does is he wins on crossers with speed. Well, they have a lot of speed with Calvin, less so. So he'll have opportunities. But why would you have him run the crossers when you can get what you got out of DK Metcalf on an 80-yarder, right? I mean, that's why would you do that? So just use DK there. Use Scotty Miller, who I think is going to be the starter on the outside probably most of the time. They'll use Skowronek as well because he's a blocker. But he's going to have chances. Roman's going to have chances. This is kind of like Roman's moment, right? He's probably going to play 15 to 20 snaps. If he's going to get open and he's going to make some plays and some explosive plays and really carve out a role for himself, this is what it's going to be. So we'll see where things go. But I think the Steelers thought he would be more well-rounded. He'd be a better route runner. He could play outside, inside. Right now, he's kind of just an explosive player. You have to keep free of press coverage and play him in the slot. And he also has a very limited route tree that he can win on. Granted, he can get explosives on there. So you got to kind of draw up touches for him rather than kind of roll the ball out there and say, all right, go win, Roman. It's not as easy for him, I think, as it is for others.
Yes, his route tree is just a little shrub at the moment, I think.
Yes.
Nick Farabaugh from Penn Live, he's got to get to the Tomlin News Conference, so we'll speed it up here. Limits and I give Aaron Rodgers a B-plus through about a quarter of the season. What grade would you give him? Is he better than you thought? He couldn't possibly be as bad as Pro Football Focus thinks he is. Austin and I say B plus. What say you?
I'd say about a B. I think that's fair. Listen, he hasn't done a ton of pushing the ball down the football field. He has the quickest time to throw in the league. As I said, I like averaged up the target a lot because this team is just throwing quick game, quick game, quick game. But also, Rodgers has been so surgical at it. 71% of his yards right now come after the catch. And while some of that can be said, oh, is he a yak merchant? He's also just placing the ball very well for guys to create yardage. And so that's something I think that's been positive. I think the best thing that we've seen out of him, though, has been his work at the line of scrimmage, just catching 12 men on the field. There are multiple times against the Vikings, and I'm not sure it's been talked about enough, where we talked about those Flores rotations, right, where Flores moves the guys around and what happens pre-snap. Well, Rodgers would catch the mid-rotation and get free 15, 20 yards a few times just because they weren't set. Only a veteran quarterback can do that. And I think his upside there is immense. And I also think that there is enough upside to say, hey, he can still throw the ball down the field. They just haven't had to pull that card out of the hat yet. And so he's done a nice job. There have been a few times, I think, where he's made some errant throws, and particularly the first two games where I thought he got a little too much in the waters for turnovers. He should have had two or three picks against the Jets. They dropped them. But I think you really look at the last two games, I think he settled in pretty nicely here into what he is. And I think there's more to unlock. So, yeah, I think a solid B right now for Aaron Rodgers.
Lastly, what does Highsmith's potential return mean for Nick Herbig, who's been a revelation? I mean, he makes game-changing plays.
He's a star, man, and that's what he is. He is their, in my opinion, their best pure pass rusher at edge. He is just so dynamic and explosive. What I think happens here is you're going to see that three outside linebacker package with him, Highsmith, and Watt on the field. I think kind of, you know, TJ at some points was playing 90% of the snaps. We can dial that back a little bit. He doesn't need to be running to the ground. You want to make sure he's good in December and January. So, you know, you could take, you know, 10% off that, still play TJ Watt 80% of the time. Highsmith, you know, was playing 80%. He probably only needs to play 60. Herbig was playing 30. He needs to be playing 55, 60. So
right.
Dial it
I
up
agree.
A little bit. So, you know, I think you could take a little bit away from Watt so he doesn't get completely just pounded into dust early in the year. You could take some away from Highsmith. I actually think Highsmith coming off the field a little more is going to be much better for him, because I think people are too low on Alex Highsmith right now. I understand the health issues, but as a player on the field, I think he's great. And I actually think the lower kind of usage is going to allow him to appear more explosive, give teams different looks. Him and Herbig are so different, too, that you're going to have to beat them different ways. So I think it's going to be a really good revelation for Alex Highsmith, too. So really, if you can play 80-60-60, you know, around that, because they're going to be on the field a lot together, I think that three outside linebacker package is going to be a very real thing. I think that sounds about right. So Herbig has to play just way more. He's too good. And this offseason, we can talk about tough decisions, but you have to pay Nick Herbig.
Nick, we appreciate the time, man. You're off to Tomlin. We'll be carrying the Tomlin News Conference live at noon. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Joe. Appreciate it.
All right, man. That's Nick Faribault. He's good. And, man, that Steeler defense, even though they gave up some big plays, and they did, they had some broken coverages. They do have Highsmith out, and they did have Jalen Ramsey leave that game at one point. That was really the first time, even including the Patriots game, where I thought it was as much about the Patriots' carelessness as anything else. It was the first time I felt pure violence and destruction and speed all over the field for the Steelers. That was fun to watch. And then I think and project to what they're going to do potentially to Dylan Gabriel and Jake Browning, or whoever is playing quarterback for the Bengals. If Lamar is still out, oh my God, who's Cooper Rush? People like that. I mean, that was really fun to watch. That reminded me of some of their better defenses during this era and other eras, where they were just smashing people.
And Nick Herbig has to be on the field, whether it's three linebackers that they end up using and they take a defensive lineman off the field, or they take an extra corner off the field. Even if you used all three at the same time, I'd like to see it. That'd be unique.
Me too.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
An absolutely stunning loss for Penn State on Saturday. One of the worst losses maybe in the past 40 years in college football. when you look at a t- I think it was, what was the stat, a top 10 team losing to an 0-4 team limits, is that the one where it was the second one in 40 years or something ridiculous like that?
Yeah, number 7 BYU lost in 1985, last time it happened.
Yeah, 1985. It's incredible. So of course, the James Franklin talk has heated up to all-time highs now. Listen, if you're never or almost never going to win big games, you need to win every single small one. And he pretty much did, kind of remarkably. They never get upset. But then you lose that one and all hell breaks loose. Here to talk about that, my buddy Corey Geiger, longtime Penn State reporter and host of the Sports Central radio program in Central PA. Corey, long time no talk. Good to talk to you again, man. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. You said it perfectly. All hell breaks loose. They don't lose. They don't lose these kind of games, and then you lose the worst possible. I mean, there are people here saying this is the worst loss in Penn State football history. So, I mean, that's how much hell is broken loose.
That was going to be my first question before we got to all the Franklin stuff, was just that. Is it the worst loss in Penn State football history?
We can all be guilty of recency bias. I'm only 51. I don't go back 100 years. But given what was expected, you started the season as the number 2 team in the country. You still had everything to play for. They could have made the playoff even losing to Ohio State. If they'd lost to Oregon and Ohio State, they're still probably in the playoff. And here's a key component, Jack. I can't stress this enough. They're looking at a drop-off next year. They lose Drew Aller, both running backs. They're great defensive players. The next year could be an 8-4 kind of season anyway. So you put all of your eggs into this basket right here, and this was the golden opportunity. So if you can't make it now, I mean, there's every reason to believe that Penn State will never get back to the position that they were in 2 weeks ago.
Wow. All right. Well, before we launch into that, let's just get some facts right. How many years are left on Franklin's deal? What's the buyout right now? Like, if they wanted to fire him after the game on Saturday, go the Lane Kiffin route. And what would the buyout be after this season?
Yeah, that's where it gets into. I think the number that is right now is $56 million. So five plus years, $56 million. And what I've seen, looking at some research, is of January 1st, it could be down to $48 million. So you're not getting off the hook for less than $48 million. But you can't wait until January 1st. You know, you can't go hire a college football coach, I don't think, on January 1st after the transfer portal window, you know, with all of that stuff going on. So you really can't even do that. So, you know, basically we're looking at 50, 52, 54, somewhere in that time frame, in that range. And here's the thing. People that think Penn State University has all this money and can just afford to buy out anybody at any time, that's really not true. They're renovating a $700 million stadium right now at Beaver Stadium. That costs a ton of money. They're trying to get their NIL, you know, up to speed with where it needs to be. They've been behind for the last few years. They finally caught up there. Penn State can't just go write a check for $50 million. I just don't know. So here's my thing, Joe. I think all of this is in James Franklin's court. If James Franklin wants to do best for Penn State, and quite frankly, probably what's best for James Franklin and his sanity, he agrees to find some kind of way, some kind of middle ground after the season. Maybe he doesn't get all $50 million. Maybe they work out a deal at 25 or 30. Maybe they Bobby Bonilla him and give him $2 million a year for 20 years or something. But James Franklin would have to be amenable to all of that because he holds all of the leverage here with the $50 plus million buyout.
All right. That was a lot and I understood it, but it leads to a question or two. So, if he doesn't do that, then the people who say, you know what, with that kind of buyout, you're stuck with him, they're pretty much right? Or is there a chance that somebody who's very rich and especially upset could step in, maybe a couple of them step in and take care of that buyout?
You never say never. Anything could happen. Terry Pegula, funded their hockey teams, spending $100 million. He owns the Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Sabres. He's worth, I think at last check, $4.5 billion. You know, but I don't know that he's going to want to write a check for $50
million. Yeah.
And, you know, Penn State is not – Penn State's a, you know, a kind of, it's in the middle of nowhere farm country. I don't think they've got just massive amounts of super rich, you know, alumni. They have rich alumni, obviously. So, again, I kind of come back to my notion of could James work with them and say, look, I realize I've run my course here. I am now holding the university and the football program back a little. Might he agree to 30, 35? 40? Maybe not. Maybe he won't. Maybe in no way would he ever do that. But again, I think the fan base has turned on him so much now, Joe. We've not seen this. And I just don't know of a way. There's only one way he can get the fan base back, and that's to go to Ohio State and win next month. But that's a very slim possibility.
If they win out, what are their chances of making the playoff?
99% easily. Mm. They make the playoff easily. They would have a win over the number one team in the country. They would have the very best win of any team in the country at the end of the year over Ohio State, being number one. They would beat Indiana. I don't know what Indiana's going to finish up with. They play Oregon this weekend, but Indiana would be a good win, and you'd have a road win at Iowa. So they would be 10-2. They would have the very best. They would have the worst loss in the country, no question, but they'd have the best win in the country. I'm 99% certain a 10-2 Penn State team gets in, but James has only beaten Ohio State one time, and it took a miracle to do that. I just see very little chance that they're going to Columbus and winning.
All right, what percent chance then if they win at Columbus, lose to Indiana, and go 9-3? Any chance at all?
No. Okay. The win at Ohio State would be great, but you're 9-3, and you've still got – not only do you have the worst loss in the country, you will have then – and this doesn't work well for James Franklin either. Say James Franklin beats Ohio State, and we all can – and say, hey, you finally got over the hump and you finally did it. Then you go lose to Indiana. Well, you've just thrown away all of the goodwill of beating Ohio State. You see what I'm saying? So there's really nothing he can do short of winning out that I think would appease everybody.
Now, Corey, I can make the argument too, as I'm sure a lot of other programs on the outside will, that if you're 10-2, but the teams like the SEC, the ACC, they're playing one Power 4 non-conference opponent, teams could knock Penn State's pretty much weak non-conference schedule and basically say, hey, there's another reason why they shouldn't be able to get in. Do you think that's fair?
At 10 and 2 with losses to Oregon and Ohio State, I do think that would have been fair. They probably would have been a 10, 11, 12 seed. But if they win at Ohio State, again, I think the committee, they will certainly criticize them for the terrible, terrible loss. But the committee will also heap an enormous amount of praise on them. There would not be a single team in the country, not any team in the country, that would have a better win on their resume than Penn State if they win at Ohio State. And that would, and again, Indiana's probably going to finish the top 15, top 20 team as well. But that Ohio State win would carry such weight and gravitas that no one else could argue that they've got a better victory than that.
Percent chance that Penn State makes the playoff?
As of right now, 5%. I think I give them a 5% chance to win at Ohio State, and if they do that, they are good enough to run the table. But you know, their hopes come down to Ohio State.
Percent chance Franklin is back next season?
Okay, so this is where things get fascinating because of all that buyout stuff. I would say right now, it's probably a 70 to 75% chance that he's back. As of right now today, on October 7th, because they haven't lost to Ohio State yet. They haven't lost to Indiana yet. They haven't lost to Iowa. They still have their season and their goals, you know, in front of them. But if they go lose by 20 points to Ohio State, you know, again, things can change. I would say if they lose to Ohio State, now the number probably drops into the probably 50-50 range. And I will keep coming back to this. James Franklin has lost the fan base. James Franklin, our my longtime colleague out this way, Joe Neil Riddell, he said on my radio show the other day, this was a great word. He called James Franklin a lonely figure. Lonely is the word, mm-hmm. because he has busted his butt for 12 years to make Penn State as good of a program as it could be. And in the last 9 days, it's all been flushed away. I mean, if they beat Oregon, we're not talking about a lot of this stuff. So basically 12 years worth of work, of working 16, 18 hours a day, trying to do everything you could, it's all just gone. It's all happened so quickly, and the whole world has turned on James Franklin. And at some point as a human being, you might just say, hey, they don't appreciate me. They don't want me. They don't respect what I've done, busting my ass all this time to get us here. And then he might decide, you know what, I want to be somewhere else.
Corey Geiger, longtime Penn State reporter, host of the Sports Central radio program in Central PA. We're down under a minute, Corey. Last question. Are Drew Aller's issues more about Drew Aller or the coaching staff?
I will do a cop-out and say both, but I will lean more toward Drew Aller. I just don't think the kid is remotely as good as anybody possibly thought. This notion that the Steelers could have taken him or whatever. Joe, I'm a Steelers fan. Omar Khan should be fired if he drafts Drew Aller.
Mm. Good stuff, Corey. We appreciate it, man. We'll talk again later in the year.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. That's what I like. Short and to the point and strong opinions.
Omar Khan should be fired if he drives Drew Aller.
I mean, at this point, I would agree.
Man, that's a take.
Plus, it would be Tomlin drafting him anyway.
It would.
Thank you, Limits. That was a great guest. 75% chance he's back because of the buyout stuff.
I know.
But I think there is that chance that Franklin will want to come to an agreement. I mean,
yeah, but
has got to be miserable.
He's going to want his money. Oh, life is definitely miserable.
Limits. He gets his money from here, and then he goes somewhere else and gets a huge contract.
He could sit and do TV or just sit around and just wait it out for a year.
So, yeah, like Belichick he could have the best of both worlds. I'll take $30 million and then go sign a $100 million deal. He would be in high demand.
That's what's best for both.
He would be in high demand.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.